John chapter 3, verses 22 through 30. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea, and there he remained with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing in Aenon near Salim, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, for John had not yet been thrown into prison. Then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. And they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who is with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. John answered and said, A man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. He who has the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. Let's say that together. He must increase, but I must decrease. Let me ask you guys the question tonight. Where is your allegiance? What are you devoted to? Are you hopelessly devoted to yourself? No pun intended for those of you who love Olivia Newton-John. You see, our self-importance is so gargantuan that we are convinced that not only are we the center of the universe, but we are the center of everyone else's universe as well. It's interesting. I was thinking about this. My son, I'm pretty sure, does not have to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't think they say it in his school. I remember we were at a sporting event and they did it and he acted like he had never heard it before in his life. But when I was a kid, how many of you, when you were kids, had to say the Pledge of Allegiance every day in school? And we all know it. And it had been so long since I said it, I couldn't remember if I put my left hand or my right hand on my chest. And I was thinking about this, that we live in an age of individualism to the point where the very country that gives us the ability to be individuals, we are so individualistic that we will not pledge our allegiance even to the country that gives us our individualism. In fact, we would not say, with what's that guy's name, Lee Greenwood, or I'm proud to be an American, you know that song? But we'd say, I'm proud to be me. That's right. I am the center of my own universe. The celebration of individualism has so dominated our culture that we will give our allegiance to nothing but ourselves. It's fascinating that this sort of concept, this sort of thinking, this sort of philosophy that has infiltrated everything that it means to be a Western thinking individual greatly impacts the way that we view our Christianity. Because if we can't give our allegiance to a country that gives us freedom, we sure as heck aren't going to give our allegiance to a God that we can't see. And this has created a great amount of skepticism in the church today, because Jesus puts forth this tremendous responsibility upon us, and that is, unless you pick up your cross and follow me, that is, unless I am Lord of your life, you are not worthy of me. But we come to Jesus and say, no, we want you to serve our demands. We come to Christ for what we can get from him, but Christ says, no, I created you for me. And you will not be happy nor content until I take the rightful place in the center of your being, that is in the throne of your heart. But we're leery of that. We're scared of it. We're skeptical. It's not what we've been taught. We've been taught to promote ourselves. And what's really amazing is that this is a church filled with artists, singer-songwriters, photographers, painters, all sorts of artistic folk that fill the city of Portland, the great liberal city that we live in. But here is the great conflict, is that means that we are the most messed up people on the planet, because Jesus constantly is demanding what? Deny yourself. And artists do what? Express your what? Self. So I'm like, express myself, deny myself, express myself. I'm going crazy. I don't know what to do. I just want everyone to hear me sing. No, I don't. Jesus, I just want it to be for you. And I've been looking at my own life, my own ego, my own vanity. And believe me, I am a man who I thought, like, as I've gotten older, I turn 37 next month, that my vanity is dissipating. No, it's not. This week, the greatest blessing has been bestowed upon my family. Somebody in our family gave us, I can't even say it, a Dodge Caravan minivan, baby, with 40,000 miles for free. And I drove that to drop my daughter off at a daycare in which I don't know a single parent there, and was humiliated by my daughter going, "We have a new silver minivan. You should come and see it." And I'm like, immediately, I'm like, it was given to us. Like, I don't like minivans. You know what? I just bought a motorcycle. 76 Super Sport 400. I was just immediately like, I don't know her. That's not my daughter. That's Taddy. I'm just dropping her off. We borrowed the minivan. She's like, "It's our minivan." I'm like, I'm totally making excuses to strangers. And they don't care because I think I'm the center of their universe. Like, they're thinking, "I can't believe that man drives a minivan." But they don't care. They're not even thinking about it, but I'm thinking about it. Believe me, I am no stranger to vanity, to ego. But here, all joking aside, we find that in Romans chapter 7, verse 18, it says, "For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find." And let me ask you the question tonight. Is your faith in Christ self-serving? Do you think Jesus will serve your agenda? In a society that promotes self-everything, how do we become less self-confident, less self-reliant, less self-centered, more Christ-confident, more Christ-reliant, more Christ-centered? You see, pride is at the heart. It is the root, the essence of all sin. But independence from God is at the heart of pride. And I think that it's essential tonight that, you guys, we understand something, that humility for the believer is a non-negotiable. I got up at about 4:50 this morning and picked up my computer and began to work on the message. And I found online this really powerful little book by Andrew Murray called Humility. And I sat down and I could not stop reading it. I read the entire book this morning, which fed deeply into the message. And listen to these things that he says about humility, because this is what we're going to think upon tonight. He says, "Humility, the place of entire dependence on God." Humility is the place of entire dependence on God, is from the very nature of things, the first duty and the highest virtue of the creature and the root of every virtue. He goes on to say, "His humility, that is Christ, is our salvation, and his salvation is our humility." For what does it say about Jesus? "He who humbled himself to the point of death, that he could restore our relationship with his Father." That's amazing. Humility, Murray goes on to say, is the only soil in which the graces root. The lack of humility is a sufficient explanation of every defect and failure. Humility is not so much a grace or a virtue along with others. It is the root of all, because it alone takes the right attitude before God and allows him as God to do all. In other words, the essence and the root of humility is such an intense dependence upon God that we might know him and love him and serve him. We come to Jesus that we might know him and love him and serve him. And as we are so focused on him, we find that we begin to shrink and he begins to increase, so that when the world looks at us, they no longer see us, but they see Christ in us working through us. And this is the supreme pillar of Door of Hope, that we would know and love Jesus Christ with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and help others know and love him by loving them like he loved us. Let's look tonight at three facets to this non-negotiable quality that was found beautifully in John the Baptist, supremely in Jesus, and must be found in you and I. Humility, first of all, we're going to consider is the recognition that everything I have received from Jesus Christ. Humility, secondly, is the surrender to the sender, Jesus Christ. That is, I am no longer in control. Christ is now in control of my life. And third, humility is the sole satisfaction in the exaltation of Jesus Christ. In other words, the chief end of man, that is the supreme purpose of our being created, is to bring God glory. But let's begin by considering the context of this story. What do we have in verses 22 through 26? After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea, and there he remained with them and baptized. Now, John also was baptizing in Anan near Salem because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized, for John had not yet been thrown into prison. Then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification, and they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who is with you beyond the Jordan, speaking of Jesus, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. So our story begins where John the Baptist's ministry and life is about to end. And there was a rivalry, not between John the Baptist and Jesus, but there seems to be a bit of a rivalry between John the Baptist's followers and Jesus's followers. In other words, there was a certain sense of competition. Now, all of us love a little competition. I don't know how many of you have kids in here. Okay, if you have kids, then you know about these new board games. They're cooperative board games. Have you played these things? They're the dumbest thing ever. That means cooperative means that nobody wins. What the heck is the purpose of a game if there's no winner? I'm like, I will not play with you, son, unless one of us can lose. Okay? We don't do teamwork games here. Games are meant for competition. We are competitive by nature. But this danger of competition had arisen, and it wasn't between Jesus and John. In fact, we see John's beautiful humility, which is what we're going to investigate. But what they essentially came to him and said, listen, John, look at Jesus, whom you testified of. He's got more people coming to him. He's baptizing more people, and you're getting less and less people. And there's this fear. Your ministry is about to go out of business. It's coming to an end. What do you think about this? This isn't right. And this puts before us the wickedness of religious jealousy. It's literally fighting over a crown that belongs to Christ alone. But I know what it's like to have that little pang when you see someone doing better than you, when you hear about someone that's getting more people at their church. Listen, it's not about what we do. It's about what Christ does and what God chooses to do in his sovereign purposes. It's that God grew the church daily. And it was God who was bringing the increase to Jesus, for John the Baptist's ministry had served its purpose. But here we see that religious jealousy setting in. If the Lord is doing it, that is, if you see someone doing what you do and they're doing it better than you, if the Lord is doing it, why should we be jealous? Should we not be able to celebrate what they're doing if it's God who is gifting them to do what they're doing? If God is not doing it, why should we be jealous of a man who thinks he's doing it and isn't and finds that he has no reward but only the displeasure of God? Either way, why would we be jealous? It's not between us and them. It's between God and them. But here is the essence of all jealousy, is it begins to look at what we don't have and what they have. And remember the message on envy, how it creates such bitterness within us that can rob us of all joy. But when we begin to fix our eyes upon Christ and see that he is the one who is in control of the situation, it is not my place to look at other ministries around Portland and compare what's happening at Door of Hope. What it is my place is to celebrate what God is doing here as well as what he is doing everywhere else. Because what we want to see is as many people as possible come into a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. And I don't care if it's me or Rick McKinley or my brother John Mark Comer, whoever it is in this city, I'm just grateful that the gospel is being preached. But let's look at John's response, for this is the essence of what I want us to consider tonight. And first, in 27, we are going to see that humility is the recognition that everything I have received from Jesus Christ. What does John say? John answered and said, a man can receive nothing unless, what? A man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. I love this because it's a move from less self-confidence and more Christ confidence. Chesterton made this incredible statement about self-confidence. He says, complete self-confidence is not merely a sin. Complete self-confidence is a weakness. The truth is this, guys, pride must die in us or nothing of heaven can live in us. You see, when we are totally self-confident, that is that everything I have done it myself. I did it my way, and now I am prospering from my gifts and my talents and all that I bring to the plate. And John the Baptist reminds us firmly that humility, which is necessary for salvation, for it is our salvation, humility recognizes that everything that we have that is worth having comes from God. And so why would we pride ourselves? Why would I pride myself in the ability to sing? Did I write into my DNA the ability to sing? I inherited it from my mother. I had nothing to do with the ability to sing. And some of you may argue, he can't sing. I don't care what you think. I only care what God thinks. But the question, all of us have different gifts, different talents. Some of us are smarter than others. Some of us have a greater artistic ability than others. But everything you have, no matter what it is, and no matter what degree you have it, it came from Christ. And unless we recognize that everything that we have that is worth having is from him, then we will miss the whole essence of the Christian faith. Because as long as you are confident only in self, you will miss Christ altogether. Because it is an absolute unacceptable sin to say, I have made myself, I will be my own person. The very thing that our culture promotes, God says, is an abomination to me. That's a heavy thought, isn't it? And we think about this reality because there are times, you guys, when we will exalt in our own abilities. Or we will think that we put too much thought into ourselves, too much time and energy worrying about what we can and can't do. But it hurts us, and it breaks not only our hearts, but it breaks God's as well. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7 says, for who makes you differ from another, and what do you have that you did not receive? Now, if you did indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? You see, modern thought comes with this horrible agenda. It says, I deserve more than I have, and I am ungrateful for what I do have. Because we do not see that everything we have, the place that we are in, the position that we are in, God has given to us. And what it creates is when we think that we are responsible for everything, it actually creates a lack of gratitude because we're never content with what we have or who we are. We always want to be something more than we are. We're always looking what others have. And this is what creates that great sense of dissatisfaction in our lives. And it creates this sort of sense of entitlement. I deserve more than what I have. But if we would just step back and begin to thank God for the life that we have, the possibility of knowing him intimately, no matter what the trial that you are going through right now, the possibility of knowing him right now where you're at, the reality that the greatest gift that God gives is always God himself. And self-confidence will rob you of discovering that gift. But a realization that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. And it causes us to fall at the feet of Christ in surrender and humility. Lord, only you can help me. Only you can bring me the satisfaction that I so long for. This is what our hearts were made for. And we need Christ confidence. Are you confident that Christ is in you? Because Christ confidence gives us the ability to stand up against the ways of the world. And to say that there is something bigger than this life. And there is something worth living for no matter what the trial and tribulation. I have Christ with me. And because of that, I am confident not in my abilities, but in his ability in and through my life. It's beautiful. Secondly, humility is the surrender to the sender. That is, surrender to Jesus Christ. I am not in control. Look at verse 28. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. Notice in John's statement that there is less self-reliance and more Christ-reliance. He has fulfilled what he was sent to do. He has lived his life within the parameters that God gave him, and he is satisfied with the life that he has been given. He is satisfied with the call that has been upon his life because he was surrendered totally, completely to the will of God. And yes, the will of God took him into the wilderness. And yes, ultimately, his surrender to God cost him his life. But it was a joy for him to lay down his life for Jesus Christ because he was sent to make way for the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He was totally surrendered to Jesus. And he said, I will go wherever you want me to go. I will do whatever you want me to do. And God is looking for men and women who are willing to live with that sort of reckless abandon. A people that say, I'm not going to dictate my own terms any longer, but I'm going to come to Christ with all that I am, all my brokenness, all my baggage. I'm going to lay it at his feet, and I'm going to say, Jesus, you make of me what you want me to be. A total surrender is what Christ is looking for. Not a reliance upon your broken self, but taking your broken self and putting it in full reliance upon him. Allegiance to Christ could mean that your dreams will be stripped away. I think W.B. Yeats, the great Irish poet, said it best in his beautiful poem, but disturbingly close to home. It's entitled, He Wishes for Clothes from Heaven. In the close of the poem, he says, but I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly because you tread on my dreams. Isn't that the same fear that you and I have about coming to Christ? Lord, if I come and surrender myself to you, you'll take my dreams. And all I ask is that you would tread lightly because you're treading on my dreams. How can you strip me of all the things that I ever wanted to do? This was my question to Jesus when I came to him. Lord, if I really surrender to you, then I won't be able to do music anymore. You guys, I'm 36 years old and I just made my first real record. And I made records all through my 20s. And I can promise you the one I just made is real compared to those ones. And it's amazing that the dreams that we are so afraid of losing are more likely to be pulled out of our hands when we hold control of them than when we lay them at Christ's feet. Our surrender to Christ puts safety of our hopes and our desires in his hands because he may redefine them. And I often say God will give us what we want when we no longer need it because he wants himself to be the supreme thing that we need and want. This is the beauty of the gospel. Matthew chapter 10, verse 38. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. And you guys, we are offended by that. But the gospel offends. For the gospel says there is nothing you can bring to God that will help you in regards to your salvation. There is nothing that he wants from you other than your surrender to him. Nothing. And then you are giving him the right to decide how it is that your gifts should be used. But let me tell you, if you have certain gifts, he gave them to you, which means he probably wants to use them for his glory and for his kingdom. So why are you afraid? What are you afraid of? Why are you holding back from Christ tonight? This is what the Lord asks me every day. Josh, do not hold back. Preach what I put upon your heart. Do not be afraid to surrender fully to me. Only then will I be able to move powerfully through your life. And he says the exact same thing to every one of us in this room. Only when we are surrendered to him can he move in power. Mark 10, verses 28 through 31, it says, then Peter began to say to him, see, we have left all and followed you. So Jesus answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake and the gospel's, who shall not receive a hundredfold now in this time, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions, and in the age to come eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first. Listen, guys, I know that you are thinking, if I surrender to Jesus, will I lose myself? And I would argue, without Jesus, you are lost. That's the reality. There is no other way. Third, let's consider this. Humility is the sole satisfaction, in Jesus Christ's exaltation. Humility is the sole satisfaction in Jesus Christ's exaltation. What does he say in verses 29 and 30? He who has the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. He must increase, I must decrease. He must increase, but I must decrease. Less here you see self-centeredness and more Christ-centeredness. He must be more and more, John says, but I must become less and less. You guys, here's the reality. Self-expenditure, not self-realization, is what God wants from us and is the key to him being glorified. You guys, you will not be filled with joy until your life is poured out for the gospel. It is when our lives are laid down at the feet of Christ and he picks us up and he fills us with himself and begins to redefine us in himself. It is then when we begin to decrease and he begins to increase that people begin to see him in and through us. This is when light, the light of Christ, when he says, I am the light of the world. And he says to you and I, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do they take a lamp and put it under a basket. But this is what we do when we continue to take control of our lives. When we refuse to decrease, we find that our lives continually go down and down and down. But when we lay our lives down, Christ then picks us up and we begin to radiate for him. We begin to be a reflection of his life and his light. We are like the moon. Secondary light. The moon reflects the sun's light. But when the moon is directly in front of the sun, what happens? It's eclipse. And so it is that we need to be positioned in such a way that the sun can shine in and through our lives. And it requires that we lay our lives down at his feet. Luke chapter 9, verse 24, it says, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. Decreasing is not losing one's identity, but being identified with Jesus, who shows us who we really are meant to be. I always say that the good death is a death to the lie of who you think you are, that Christ might redefine you in himself. That's a powerful truth. You see, the secret of all power in the Christian is Jesus being seen. But for many of you, you act as if Jesus is a dirty little secret that must be hidden. How many of us, if we were truly honest with ourselves, act as if mentioning Jesus Christ is the worst possible scenario that could happen to you in a public space? A total sickening fear at the idea of telling those that do not know Christ, I follow Jesus. Is he a dirty little secret, or is he the joy of your life? Because I would argue that as long as you hold on to self as the supreme thing, you will never know Jesus. And if you do not know him, you can never be excited about him. And if you aren't excited about him, you will not talk to anyone about him, nor should you, until you know him, until you love him, until you love him so deeply that you cannot keep your mouth shut but talk about him. Do you have that sort of reckless abandon? Can you say with Will Ferrell and Elf, I'm in love and I don't care who knows? Can you scream that out about Jesus? Are you ashamed to carry a Bible around with you? Are you ashamed to mention Christ to your coworkers, to your friends? Oh, we want a non-offensive gospel. We want a gospel that we just, you know, we mow lawns. That tells people the gospel. Yes, it is true that actions must come in line with words, and words without actions become dead words. But nonetheless, the gospel is a truth that is communicated by words. How shall they hear if there is no preacher to preach, is what is said. Not how shall they hear if there's no one to do handy jobs around the house and show everyone that you're really nice. Listen, the source of our kindness, the source of our love for a lost world, the source of all of it should be our love for a Christ that we know who is alive, who is with us, and who is in us, working through us. You guys, I'm not preaching at you. I'm preaching at myself as well. For there have been so many times where Jesus has been a dirty little secret in my life. And I have been ashamed. Oh, get around a group of little hipsters on Hawthorne. And I'm like, Jesus, who? Jesus, I don't know Jesus. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm a pastor. Yeah, I'm a pastor down the street at a church. But and you want to give all these explanations how it's different from other churches. They're like, do you teach the Bible? Well, yes. Yes. We're about Jesus. We preach the word. We believe in the gospel. We believe that it's the answer to all of man's problems. We believe that there is a thing called heaven, and we believe that there is a thing called hell, and we believe that people are going one of two places. We believe that Jesus Christ can save you if you give your life to him, because he is alive and because he is God and because he is everything that he said he is. Can we stand under that declaration with a boldness? It will not come unless we humble ourselves before our God, unless we lay down at his feet everything that we are, that we might discover who he is. Man, the problem for often for us is that we can be really good actors in regards to our spirituality. One way with our Christian friends, another way with our non-Christian friends. It reminds me in closing of a fairy tale by George MacDonald entitled The Wise Woman. And in The Wise Woman, there are these two incredibly snobby, self-conceited, self-concerned girls that are problematic on multiple levels. And this wise woman, who's a bit of a witch, but I think she's supposed to be God in the fairy tale, she kidnaps these girls to help them discover how self-conceited and self-absorbed they are. And here's the awesome thing. The one girl, her name is Agnes. She has been able to hide her self-conceit behind a good face. And he writes that the face is the surface of the mind. And he says, arrogance was allowed to gaze into the wise woman's mirror and saw a hideous face that made her scream, because what she saw was the ugliness of her own heart. But here's what she did. Instead of thinking how to kill the ugly things in her heart, she was with all her might resolving to be more careful with her face. That is, to keep down the things in her heart so that they should not show in her face. She was resolved to be a hypocrite as well as a self-worshipper. Her heart was wormy, and the worms were eating very fast now. Yikes. I love that. She worked hard on her face to keep down the reality of the ugliness of her heart. And how many of us have put on the good face when really in our heart it is filled with the worms of self-love? Do we not see our salvation consists primarily in being saved from ourselves? This is why it says in James 4:6, but he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humility before God is nothing, guys, if it is not proved in humility before each other. This is why the supreme test of whether or not we are humble is in how we love one another. Romans 12:16, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Listen to this. The humble man, says Murray, feels no jealousy or envy. He can praise God when others are preferred and blessed before him. He can bear to hear others praised and himself forgotten, because in God's presence, he has learned to say with Paul, I am nothing. He has received the Spirit of Jesus, who pleased not himself and sought not his own honor, as the Spirit of his life. That is the same Spirit that is to be found in us. So that when I drive down the road in that Dodge, the stinking Dodge Caravan, I'm like, I am nothing. I am nothing. Jesus is everything. I'm just going to put some Jesus bumper stickers on that thing just to break myself, my ego. But listen carefully, guys. Humility is learned often in the school of humiliation. And we should just humble ourselves so that we don't have to go through that humiliation. Let me ask you the question tonight. Who is on the throne of your heart? James 4:10 says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Humility is the disappearance of oneself into all that God is. Can you say with John, I must decrease, but he must increase. More of him, less of me. More of him. I pray that the world would see Jesus Christ in you as we lay our lives down at his feet and we trust him with all of our dreams, all of our ambitions, all of our aspirations. If we bring everything that we are, even our brokenness, all of our baggage, and we lay it at the feet of Christ and allow him to redefine us in himself, I promise what you will discover is a gospel of freedom, a gospel of liberty, a gospel that will set you free from the tyranny of yourself. That is my prayer for us tonight. Let's pray.